If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick, Behind the Curtain. It's my opportunity to step away from the worlds of politics and law that you watch me cover on television every day into the world of arts and entertainment and comedy. And today just brings all of that together with my guest. You'll understand that in a moment. And first of all, let me tell you that what triggered this was I was kind of going through some TV shows and flipping. You know how we do that. And I come across this show called Sugar Highs. And I fell in love with it and just said, this is just such an amazing show. Hi, Sam, we're going to pretend you were always here. This is just such an amazing show. And I kind of did a reach out because I wanted to do something about it and heard back from one of the cast members. And boom, here we are with one of the cast members, perhaps being a bit of a surprise, because my guess is a lot of people watching this know who he is from a host of other things. But let me start by introducing. I'm going to actually go with the younger folks here, the stars of Sugar Highs, who propelled this show. We'll talk about it. But joining me, Adam Fox, who plays Bud, this young guy going for stardom. You're in the show. You're of course real life as well. But you're a dancer. You're an actor looking for fame. And I think Adam, you're kind of a bit of a diva in this thing, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of think so, too. Joey Benny joins us as well, and Joey plays Tab. You're kind of another opposite here, Joey, because you kind of like have no ambitions at all. Am I just being too harsh on Tab?
Yeah, he just wants to enjoy life and be cool.
And work out and skateboard.
Yeah.
And the third of you, Sam Davison, joins us, who plays Mickey. You're kind of interesting, Mickey, because I'm fairly sure all of you live in Canada. And so your role in this was as an undocumented Canadian living and trying to get under the table gigs to kind of pull this off. But that's always an underlying theme for all of this. And in some ways, it looks like you just kind of put up with these other two guys.
Yeah. I think my character being Canadian was a lot of the fact that I'm not very versatile in terms of dialect. So,
So they said, just use the one you got.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. And also joining me, this is the face I think that almost everybody knows who's watching this, Scott Thompson. And Scott, when I first saw you, you're in the first episode of the show and going forward. But when I first saw you on the show, I said, that for me, and I, with all due respect to everybody, that lended just so much credibility for me to the series, because you are a very well-established kids in the hall back in the 80s. I've been watching you forever. Still with us. And we're going to talk about the show first, but you actually, for these last period of years, working with Paul Bellini and others, have been producing these albums, kind of these punk rock albums. You got a new one that just came out called Valley of Song as part of the group Mouth Congress. We're going to talk specifically about that. And I know your other three friends will want to hear all about that. But first, let's talk about Sugar Highs. Adam, I'm going to start with you, and I'm going to go off kilter a little bit, because one of the reasons we're doing this now and we didn't do it before is that somebody in this panel has been spending an awful lot of time in Thailand for the last month. So I just have to ask you, was that work fun? What was that all about?
Yeah, you couldn't tell because I think I look white as a ghost right now. But, I look really pale. I don't know what's going on. Some people know outside of the industry, but basically actors don't have to audition in person right now. So it wasn't my first time doing something like this, but I basically wanted to see how it would go spending 2 months on the other side of the world, still auditioning for things in North America. And then also I did a modeling contract in Bangkok when I was younger. So I also knew the local industry. So I was able to double dip in like the Thai industry and then also still be available for North America.
And that's why
I traveled a bit at the end.
And of course, you and I in our text, I gave you a few of my Thai words. I've been there as well. So Sawati Krap to you. And that also explains, too, why you, because you did have some posts of work you were doing there. And I thought, oh, wow, he just went over there a bit. The man's got work going on.
A little bit. Yeah. Well, that was, I think it was in Canada, but yeah.
Oh, well, I thought some Thai stuff. Maybe it was just welcoming you to a restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Those things got posted late. And Joey, let's go back to talking about sort of your character and stuff. How different was this from some of the other things that you've been doing?
Well, Tab is he's not the sharpest tool in the shed, and I haven't really had to play anyone like that. So it was kind of fun to just, you know, go through it and discover as I went, because normally normally things I book are pretty, like, the guy's smart and knows what he's doing. So it was fun. I really, like, I just love Tab, and it's so fun to, like, shave my face and bleach my hair and just be him. And he's just a lovable goof, I guess.
What's also fun is the way they play with your characters. So, Adam, your character is clearly gay in this show. Joey, your character is...
No, he's not.
He's not?
I'm just joking.
Oh, okay. I said, what did I misread? And Joey, your character kind of play for pay or whatever that phrase is, right? But pretty much it's, I mean, you're a straight guy who just goes, what the heck? There's money to be made. We'll get into the plot in this in a second. And then Sam, your character just seems sort of fluid to all of this.
Yeah.
And Sam, talk to me about some of your background. I know you've done some other series and that kind of thing before you came to Sugar Highs.
I've been acting locally as sort of a side gig for a couple of years now. I haven't been doing much recently. I've just been working as a temp laborer, but I don't know if an opportunity comes, I'll usually take it.
Why not? So you three guide this show. Scott, I'm going to come to you, but first I'm going to go back to Adam to sort of say, Adam, give us the premise of the show, because I need to bring Scott in after we get that established. Three guys living together, can't pay the rent.
Yeah, so it's three guys living in San Francisco. Actually, Joey lives in L.A. I'm a dual citizen, and then Sam's our true Canadian.
Right.
And Scott. Scott's also a true Canadian. So it's three roommates struggling to make ends meet in bustling San Francisco, facing eviction and maybe even homelessness. They find sugar daddies to pay the bills, and then adventures ensue. They learn the ups and downs of what comes with basically sex work.
Right. But it's all very funny. By the way, the show, I think you would call it a comedy, but it's not just, I mean, it's got some tender moments, almost a dramedy.
Yeah, it's definitely a dramedy.
Yeah. So Scott, that brings us to you. And you do show up in the very first episode.
I'm the oldest of the sugar babies.
Right.
I'm looking for a sugar granddaddy, and it didn't work out. So I decided to see how this sugar daddy works. So I decided, you know, while I look for my sugar granddaddy, he'll take a
right. So you tried to hire, like, maybe the real Jack Benny, right? No, I'm kidding. So talk to me about how you ended up in this show, because again, your career of as I said, I've mentioned Kids in the Hall before, but the improv work that you do, the comedy work that you do, this certainly fits. But were you looking for something at the time? Was this a project you said, I want to be a part of this one?
No, I was just asked, and it was I wanted to go to the East Coast, and it looked like fun, and that's it, basically. Yeah, I said yes.
So you play in the series, you're the first of the people who hire somebody to be with you in the show, and it's Adam that you connect with. What was that like? So you and I probably have more life experience than some of the others that are around, but what was your reaction to this concept of, you know, there's this website and these guys are, you know, putting themselves on there and folks are looking for them. Did it look to you and say, I don't know, it's very 19 or sorry, 2010, very, how did it strike you as guys? Is it very 2024?
I thought to myself, is the universe trying to tell me something? Is time to start paying for sex? I don't know. It just looked like a lot of fun. I like the scripts. I like the idea of going to the East Coast. I like the idea with working with young people. And of course, naturally, I was looking forward to doing my first sex scene. Number one, I thought, this people really want, I mean, people there, sure, they want to see the young ones, but they want to see this old guy take his clothes off. So that's what I did. I thought, I got to give some for everyone. So that's why I did it.
Give the people what they're demanding.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly.
And Joey, so the first person that you, of course, you're kind of looking for a sugar mama in this process. But again, back in an early episode, you try it the other way. Not that you act on it, but you come to realize that, you know, perhaps at least men who are desiring of a relationship are pretty generous, and it was going to help pay the rent, much less buy you shoes.
Yeah. Well, I think in the beginning, he's like, oh, how can I just kind of like string these people along without actually having to do anything? And then just like kind of be like, cool, on to the next. And then Tom Payne, the other actor who plays kind of like my main sugar daddy, we have a scene where he kind of opens up of why he's doing this. And I'm like, oh man, this is a real person. And like, I see him, I hear him, I feel what he's saying. And, so then he's like, oh man, I don't want to be a bad guy and like use these people. So it really humanizes it. And that's what gives it, layers instead of just being this, it gives the show more depth.
Yeah, what's sort of cool is, your characters, maybe even yours, Adam, your characters they have redeeming values, you know? There really are other sides to them. Sam, for you, you enter this, you don't start off in that sort of app world. This kind of all takes you, your character, by surprise a little bit. You're off doing construction work when your opportunities come up.
Yeah. Well, Mickey is working a few jobs, trying to make ends meet, and he sort of plays moral elitist at the beginning. But then he sort of warms up to it, I think, over time.
And all you guys have, different levels of challenges you'll have to make in terms of dress and undress and all that kind of stuff. I'll just stay with you for Sam. Was that sort of stuff? Was that challenging on the set, or is it like, hey, I'm an actor, do what you got to do?
No, it wasn't too challenging. I don't think so. I watched the first episode on YouTube recently, and one of the top comment, or I don't know if it was a top comment, I thumbs it up because I thought it was funny, but someone timestamped the part that showed my butt and said, poor guy's never ridden a bike in his life.
All right, let's clear up
the
room.
Sorry, I apologize for that comment.
Okay, I forgive you.
That was me.
I love it. All right, let's get the truth out. Have you ridden a bike, Sam?
I have. I wouldn't say I'm very well balanced on it, but,
All right. I just want to prove that comment wrong. Yeah. And Joey, your character is just so carefree in terms of roaming around. How about you? Just challenging? Didn't matter? You're just all fun because you're all friends now? What was your attitude about all that?
Like, our crew, we're like a little family, and I feel very comfortable. I don't feel nervous or anything. But, once you do it like the first or second day and you still have 5 weeks left to fill, you just rip the Band-Aid off, and eventually it's just like, another day at the office, or you got to look at my pale butt all day. But yeah, it's doesn't bother me.
I hear, James Vanderbeek and some other stars just did, I don't know if this played in Canada, it's here in the States, they did called the Real Full Monty, and it was to raise money for prostate cancer research and all that. So it was, again, a bunch of actors, some fairly well-known, some sports stars and stuff, but who were going to get in front of this live audience and do it, and it was like, this was tough. It was, you just said it, because that's what made me think of it, the pulling the Band-Aid off thing. But again, it was work, because look, this is about charity, this is about health, so I thought that was sort of interesting. That may air in Canada if it hasn't already. Adam, I won't ask you the same question, because given your Thailand photos, you're just fine with it.
I don't know.
I'm kidding.
Sorry, but you have a Band-Aid on your hand as you're talking about the ripping the Band-Aid off.
Oh yeah, I was away, I smashed a glass bottle in my hand.
Ow.
Yeah. That's so metal.
It was kind of, yeah. It's stitches and everything.
Go ahead.
But I feel like growing up, I used to run around naked, and my parents weren't particularly strict, so I think for me, honestly, like if it's a sex scene or a nude scene, I'm probably more preoccupied with like, does my stomach look good versus like, is my dick out,
But again, the main thing is, this is, and Scott, this to me, as I watched it, this was about relationships. It's what took me in, that this is, people in need, people searching. That's kind of the sad part, if you will. Talk to me about Early, your character, his name's Early, your character.
Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. How do you describe him? To me, there was a sadness about him, but all the characters, but do you read it the same way?
Yes, of course. My God. All gay men my age are sad. I think all gay men my age have PTSD, and there's this incredible sadness from all of us. And I think something that hasn't really been discussed, but we're all looking for meaningful relationships. and men my age have gone through a war. So it's difficult. I think that there's this incredible loneliness. I mean, I think it's always been hard to get old as a gay man in society, but I think it's particularly hard for my generation because so many of the people that we came up with are no longer with us. And now we're at the age where you have to kind of like deal with those wounds. Mm-hmm. And you're in a society where young gay people don't really want to talk about it. So I think that's what gives it. I don't think no matter how you portray men, gay men my age, I don't think it's possible to get away from that. No matter how much of a fun thing you're trying to do, I think that will always creep in. Does that sound terrible what I'm saying? But I mean,
you talked about war. You're referring to the war against AIDS, obviously, is what you're referring to. Yeah, yes, from the early mid 80s. And
what are you talking about? It was like, it's not over. What are you talking about? It's still a war. It's like, it's just slumbering. It's like Syria. People thought, the war is over. Then 8 years later, holy shit, no, it wasn't over. It was just slumbering. I think that what we have now, we have a forest fires. They're never really over. They just slumber underground, and then they erupt again.
Adam, can you tell a little bit about the writers who put this show together and whatever? What was their message? What were they trying to? Were they trying to reach young people or the older generation or everybody? What do you think the mission of Sugar High is? You've gone through two seasons. I think we don't know if there's a third season yet. Am I right? Currently, there's not one scheduled.
Yeah, we don't know. I would say, so the writer is Tom Fitzgerald. I would say that I think it's for a range of ages. I do think it does come a little bit probably more from the sugar daddy perspective. I think it's both, but I think that I would say it's a little bit more from the sugar daddy perspective. But I think it's for everyone. I mean, the target audience of Out TV is what it is. It is generally like more male and queer, but also everybody. And I would say that it definitely hits the audience because especially from traveling, like I meet people around the world that have watched it and I'm often meeting them in queer spaces. So people watch it. It circulates around groups of friends, groups of queer friends, and I think it serves the demographic well.
Yeah, and by the way, these days you can actually get it through Amazon Prime, so it's come mainstream in a variety of ways. Joey, do people recognize you? Do they notice you from this show and want to talk to you about it?
No, this is what I look like normally. So,
you'd have to take the hair back blonde, I guess.
Blonde, I'd have to be clean shaven, and I feel like in LA a lot of a lot of my friends know that I'm on the show, but I wouldn't say that I get stopped because I don't look like Tab. Like, this is what I look like. But people who do watch it, they really say like, it's a fun show, like I like to watch it. And so unless they're lying, I've never heard anyone be like, that show, I hate it. I watched it. I hate it. So it's a fun show to watch.
Exactly. Even from the opening credits, it's just so colorful. It's got so many things going on. How about you, Sam? Is this something that comes into your life in different places?
No, not really. It's probably happened once or twice, but I don't know. It doesn't seem to be making its rounds in Halifax.
Well, maybe we'll. Oh, in Halifax. Maybe
I think it actually does in Halifax because
in the film industry, yeah.
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 Well, that's right. We're keeping you in Canada, so we got to make sure that works. And Scott, as you talk to fans just around, does this come up in your dialogue at all, or is everybody taking you back to the obviously your new album? But also, I guess everybody with you wants to talk about Kids in the Hall and those days.
Probably want to talk about. No one's interested in any of my side projects. This is the thing I've realized. No one cares. No one cares about anybody in the Rolling Stones and their solo projects. They just care about the Rolling Stones. So, I mean, honestly, people just care about Kids in the Hall with me. It's weird. I'm proud of Sugar Highs, but I've never had any, honestly, no.
But obviously, no regrets, right? You made it. I mean, Kids in the Hall, you made a difference, right? I mean, when you look at SNL.
Oh, God, yeah, I'm still a kid in the hall. We just did two shows last week. It's a thing that, yeah. It will be my entire life. I mean, the only way out of the Kids in the Hall is you leave in a coffin. And we made that very clear when we were young. We were very clear that you don't get out. We were like the mafia.
Oh, wow.
In for life, and then, yeah, that's it. We almost had a deal packed.
It's a pretty good thing to be hanging your hat on anyway, though.
Absolutely. No, I'm very thrilled. I mean, not many people get that. So, yeah. But I continue to work and do things, and I think oh, this will be the thing that makes people forget the kids in the hall, but not really.
So from the generation Scott is from and I'm from, I think we probably view these shows a little bit differently.
Totally.
Yeah.
They're a miracle to me. These shows are a miracle. Yeah.
Very much so. Adam, how about you? When you enter a show like this, do you sort of, I mean, this is different from maybe art or you know, that would have been made, I don't know what, Scott, 15 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
I guess Will and Grace changed everything. There's been some things that have changed it. But Adam, are you about making a difference in all of this? Or is it like, hey, it's a gig?
With this project or in general?
Yeah. Well, both. We'll start with this project.
Yeah. I mean, I think I maybe do feel some sort of responsibility in just like telling it authentically. I mean, it is like it is heightened, right? Like the show's heightened. So obviously some moments veer a bit from reality or how I would obviously react to a situation. But yeah, there's some responsibility in like serving the community that, you know, it's portraying. And yeah, I don't take it for granted. I think that like, especially sex work, male sex work is, I don't know, it's a real thing. It's important to talk about. These dynamics are kind of rarely like, especially the, it's like such a phenomenon, I feel, in queer world with between men of like, I was thinking the other day, I wonder if it's because, you know, queer men, some of them become fathers, but they don't always get to become fathers or they don't want to become fathers. So I think that's sometimes replaced by helping out young queer men in need. And you often see an older queer man helping a younger queer man, sending him money or having him live with him. And you're kind of like, why would you do that? That guy's like clearly manipulating you, or, you know, he's clearly got a problem that's going to endanger your safety being in your apartment. But it's just like it pulls on the heartstrings. And I think that shows in the show. And I think it's true to real life.
Yeah, I think as you look at some of the older guys, Scott, some of the ones that play the older guys in this, that there's a sadness. That's where some of the sadness comes in.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's just human beings are just constantly looking for connection. But I think the show is very good in terms of it has a lot of compassion for everyone, whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
From the young sex workers to the older guys that are buying their charms.
And you know, Joey, it's funny because as Adam sort of talks about this sex worker role, I'm going to just step away from that a little bit because it's not as though you guys all sat down and said, this is what we want to do for a living. Here comes that. You couldn't pay your rent. And that's what triggers it. And it's we got to figure out a way to pay the rent. And even Sam, your character, Mickey, at one point when things aren't going well, goes like, this works. Like you can make money that way. But it's always about surviving and getting the bills paid and getting through. Joey, is that the way you and or your character saw it? Or was this a bigger purpose as Scott and Adam have talked about?
Well, I think that I think Tab looked at it as, you know, a quick fix. So like, oh, we'll do that and pay rent. And then they could pay their rent. And then he's like, oh, wow, I'm making like a lot of money. I'd have to like, you know, he starts off selling Adderall. He's like, oh, I'd have to sell like all this to be. So yeah. And then I think that it's to make life easier, but then they get so entwined and it's like a much bigger headache than they anticipate. So, I mean, I think it's good because it's not very campy. It's like anyone could watch it and kind of relate to one of the characters or be like, oh, wow, I didn't even think about it like that. And it kind of pulls the curtain back.
Yeah. And Sam, I feel like Mickey's just somebody we kind of all knew in high school. It just has that, or college, I guess, just has that way about it. But I'll ask you the same question. What is your and or Mickey's view? This is just, it's, I think Mickey's view is I just got to pay the rent. I'll do what I got to do.
Yeah. I think Mickey has a bit of a sense of pride in his work and doesn't want to participate at first. He's kind of judgy a little bit about it, but the scene where he talks to Tab, and Tab's got these very expensive shoes, I think he thinks Tab is like sort of trying to dip into the materialistic side of things, but then once he realizes that he plans on selling them and can likely make rent, he's like, okay, this is probably lucrative and maybe a good thing for me to try out.
Yeah, I just think the characters are they're so interesting to me. I'm going to ask each of you about what you think, if there is a third season, where you would take that story, but I'm going to let you think about that a little bit, because as I watch our overall time together, Scott, I want to turn to you and talk about Mouth Congress. And I won't even ask the other guys. I'm sure they all listen to and stream this every day. But sure. Valley... Yeah, Valley of Song, which is your new album. I have gone through it.
I mean, oh, I know you have early. I have as well.
You have? My God, that's thrilling.
Yeah.
All right, let's embarrass everybody. Adam, Joey, have you streamed it?
I will now.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's on my to-do list.
It should be, because I don't know what you think it is. First of all, the music, here's the thing, album. Scott. And there were earlier albums that people can listen to, Waiting for Henry, Be My Hole, The People Have Spoken. You did all those back in 21.
Be My Hole, it's our hit. It's our single.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That was a hit, Joe. It was a
hit. Only love song.
beautiful.
You should listen to it. And am I right, Scott? This album took like 3 years to get done.
Yes, it did.
So which means you started, you did it in the pandemic.
Yes. Basically, like the second year, I guess, of the pandemic, we started working on it. I guess the 2 years into it, during the final lockdown in Toronto, which had so many, I think there were seven, and I was losing my mind. And Amazon, the experience with the kids in the hall with Amazon was very, very difficult. The censorship was just over the top. So After that, I just came out of that experience and went, I just want to make something that's just art. I don't want anyone to say no. I don't want anyone to say, no, you can't do this. You can't write about this. You're not allowed to weigh in on this. So I decided I would just self-finance a real album. So I got the band back together. I set up my living room and turned it into like basically a studio. And for a year, when we would have time, free time, we would record. So it took us a year to record, like write all the songs. Then it took us a year to record it because people are all doing different things and they all had families and lives, et cetera, because it's a real band. They're real musicians. And then the third part was putting together all the videos, which we've made seven videos. So it's been a real three-year process and incredibly like a ton of work, but it's a real work of, it's a passion project, you know. And I know people really I know that it's not going to like set the music world on fire, but we really tried to make a real album. Like it's like a real rock album. Like it's punk in the fact that it's punk in that it's, we don't care it's punk, not the sound, even though there are some real punk songs, it's the attitude. It's like, well, it's got a real, I think, who fucking cares if you're offended or who cares if you don't like it? It's got that feeling. And it's interesting that I still have that feeling.
And I know you did. All the songs were written with your Kids in the Hall partner, Paul Bellini.
Yeah.
But the musicians, and I know they're not all the same throughout, but they're real musicians who are coming and playing with you guys.
Yes.
In fact, I wasn't sure if I would call this a music album or a comedy album.
Well, I would call it a music album. In fact, we just submitted it for Juno Awards, because of the Canadian Grammys. And we didn't put it in for comedy album. We put it in for alternative album of the year.
And even though there's 17 tracks on this new one, and by the way, I noticed it's not all the
double
songs.
Double album.
But not all the songs, let's be honest, not all the songs are funny. I mean, there's comedy everywhere, but there's a sense of sadness because there's almost always a target in the songs that you have.
Generally, I think with all songs, my whole thing with comedy is there's always a target. There has to be. But there are songs that are just not, they're not funny, and I decided, you know what? I don't have to always be funny. So, yeah, we just went for it. And some of the band members convinced me to put certain things in because I would be like, this isn't funny. And they're like, no, but we want to put it in. Like the song Masks, which is about my brother and my family. I was like, nobody wants to hear this because it's like a Patti Smith song. But
am I right that in that series, that I think your brother committed suicide, right?
Yeah.
And the lyrics lyrics of the song were written by him?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And the video that we made is all my father's Super 8 footage of my family. So it's like a real love letter to my family. But then there's a country and West is a country song about fame, and it's all basically about be careful what you wish for, because it's about me wishing to be famous as a kid, and then it ends, it takes a turn, which is true, and most people don't believe it. They're like, this can't be true, but it is true. So
yeah, there are messages here. I mean, even for the rest of you guys, that's why you're gonna, I mean, as you're listening to this, I'm sure it's kind of intriguing you. And just in case you're a horror film fan, there's even one about a werewolf.
The werewolf is
a good guy.
The werewolf's the hero. Yes. And this one, the werewolf's just doing what he does. It's sort of taking the Red Riding Hood story and flipping it. So she's the villain. It's Red Riding Hood that's the villain. She uses the werewolf, basically, to murder her grandmother so that she can fuck him. And then she realizes that he turns on her because she's like, she's basically, oh, she can't deal with this kind of madness. And she thinks, oh my God, this is so hot. But then he rips her to shreds too. But he's actually, he's not the villain, because all he's doing is what he's, you know, he asks her to tie him up at midnight, right? He doesn't want to be a werewolf. But she lets him out so that he can kill her grandmother, and then he turns on her.
And we can go on. I mean, there's a song called Honk, which is kind of a pandemic-type song,
I think. About the truckers, and it's a positive song about the truckers. So it is a punk album, yeah.
Yeah. You know what my favorite is? Now, the other guys will not connect with this. Tell me if I'm wrong, guys, but it's the song Witch Gabor.
Oh, Witch Gabor, that's the punkiest song of all. That's the hardest song of all, yeah. Yeah, they won't get it. But
do any of you, by show of hands, do any of you know who the Gabor sisters were?
No. Zsa Gabor?
Would that be Zsa Gabor?
Zsa Gabor.
Yes.
I only know about her.
And, no, you know, probably know Ava. If you watch Green Acres, then you got to see Ava.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Right, and Magda.
They're the Kardashians of the day, and that's what the song's about, basically. It's about every generation has a family of whores that... what? That become famous by fucking.
So
and that's really, it's about gold diggers and how gold diggers, just every generation will have gold diggers.
And that back
not,
in the, what,
no, I'm not attacking them. No. I'm just saying, you know what? You use what you have, right?
They were Hollywood fashion. They were Hollywood royalty.
And they really, they became famous because of their beauty.
Right.
And they fucked. They fucked rich men. And that's just, that's like a story as old as time, which just brings us back to Sugar Highs.
Yeah. Sugar, right? Exactly. Sugar and, we'll, yeah. And let's go back there. So, by the way, so I'm just going to say again, Valley of Song by Mouth Congress. Check it out. I have a feeling these three guys are now actually going to listen.
I think people are very surprised by it. Like, you know.
I wasn't kidding. I have listened to Mouth Congress.
There you go. Okay, Sam.
Wow.
And by the way, I expected before I listened to it that it might be a little bit more of the, you know, the Mighty Wind guys, that it might be a little more.
No, no.
But it's not. It's not at all.
No, it's not a comedy album. No, I mean, you'll laugh at it, but it's no.
Right. Let me go. Before we run out of time, let me just, if there is a third season of Sugar High, since Scott brought us back there, Adam, what would you want the plot point to be?
Okay. Well, there's one thing that Bud mentions in season one, which is ultimately wanting to do a musical, and he's yet to do that. I think that could be quite hilarious and fun. I also think that a bit of like role reversal could be fun. Like if Bud has like a change of heart and becomes like ultra Christian and judgmental of the other two and ultra pious. And then like Tab starts like an OnlyFans, which kind of feels like that would make sense in this day and age. And embraces that. And then Mickey becomes like ultra like pan and like sex positive and very liberal with that stuff. That could be like a fun dynamic shift.
That takes it a different direction. Anybody want to disagree? I'm just about losing time with you. So anybody want to add to that? Are you good with Adam's description?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I think it would be nice for Tab to land into some like super easy dream job, or almost like I picture him being like an agent for like other sugar babies and starting like
that's a thing.
It definitely can work. Guys, I need to thank you at this point before I lose you. Pick up Valley of Song, stream it, go buy it, and Sugar High is available on Amazon.Prime and Out TV at a whole bunch of other places. Thank you for your time. I never thought I could get this group together, and we did it. Happy holidays, everybody. Thank you, and I'll
keep an eye open for season
3. Nice to see you all.
Be well.
Nice to see you.
Bye.
See you.
God will take you all to lunch, I promise.
Thank you.